everyone. This is your life coach, Deborah Brown, welcoming you to Taking a Leap. Our guest today is Dr. Karen Wilson-Starks. Dr. Karen Wilson-Starks, President and CEO of Trans Leadership, Inc., is the author of the book, Lead Yourself First, The Senior Leader's Guide to Engaging Your People for Greater Performance and Impact. She shows senior corporate, military, government, and nonprofit leaders how to create a culture of development that grows leaders, builds organizations, and delivers dynamic organizational results. As a clinical psychologist and former active duty Army officer, she brings many useful experiences and perspectives to the leadership conversation. Dr. Wilson-Starks says, "You are the instrument of your leadership, so tune up and play the music only you can play." Beautiful. Welcome to the show, Dr. Karen. How are you?
I'm doing fine, and thank you so much, Deborah. It's a pleasure to be here.
You are welcome. It's a pleasure to have you here. So the first question I have for you, and I have for every guest, is what has been your biggest leap in life? As you look back at your life, when have you taken that big jump, that big risk, stepped out of your comfort zone?
Well, Deborah, actually, I have quite a few big leaps, but I'll mention one in adulthood, which was actually joining the Army. That was a huge leap for me because I come from a family that's not a military family, and I grew up in that Vietnam era, and so which was an unpopular war. So actually, being a part of the Army was very much out of the box. There weren't very many women who were going into the Army at that time. I didn't know a lot of people in the Army. And the reason I chose to go in is because I wanted to go to Walter Reed Army Medical Center in Washington, D.C. And I knew that in my career field, I would be exposed to all the kinds of disorders and challenges that I wanted to be exposed to. And it would be excellent, just training for me. So I took the leap into the unknown, which was the Army. And I'm not naturally wired for that because of a bigger goal.
Wow. How did that whole thing play out with your family, first of all, seeing that, you know, that was not probably the expected thing? How did that go?
Well, you know, initially, I think that they didn't know what to be afraid of because they didn't know a whole lot about it. And so initially, it seemed okay. And when I would come home to visit, I always had on what they call the Class A dress uniform, which at that time was very sharp. It looked a lot like a really nice flight attendant outfit. Oh. And I had on heels, I had on stockings, and I had on the skirt and the jacket and the little hat. And in fact, when I'd be flying through airports, people would often stop me thinking that I worked for the airlines and asking me airplane questions. But I think one day, I'll give you a little story. My mother, now this is when I knew she really was frightened. I was stationed at Fort Riley, the 1st Infantry Division, and that's in Kansas. My mother came out to visit, and the day she arrived, I had what they call post guard duty. So I had someone to pick her up from the airport. She went to my house. And the next day, as a prank, I said, "Well, I'm just going to wear my battle dress uniform," which she had never seen before. You know, the fatigues with all the stuff. I had a steel helmet on. I had all this wet gear. I had a, you know, 45 revolver holster, all these things.
Wow.
And I went up to my house. I rang the doorbell. And when she answered the door, she screamed. She said, "Oh, my goodness, you're in the Army." I think it really hit then, and she was, from then on, she became quite concerned.
Wow. So initially you were able to have her live with the illusion of the flight attendant life.
Well, yeah, they had no idea. Yeah. And she had never seen me.
Oh my gosh.
Then the reality hit. Yes.
So do you have any regrets about doing that?
Oh, not at all.
Is your own experience real for your mom? Or?
You know, I don't have any regrets at all because really a lot of what I do today is because of those relationships I made then and the experiences that I obtained. Some of the work I do now that's with the military, mostly senior leaders in the military and also senior government people who support the Department of Defense or the intelligence community, I am doing that work because of my military background and experience. And so I would not probably have those opportunities.
Yes, fabulous. Oh, that's a good story. So you are the master of leadership. What challenges do leaders face today? Like, bottom line, what are the key things that you find leaders across the board facing?
Yeah, there are several things, no matter what the industry is. I'm working in all sectors, and I'll tell you one aspect is what I'll call the pace of work. People are working at a very high pace. It's a very competitive environment. And in order to continue to be relevant, you've got to keep up. You have to continue to innovate. And so that pace of change drives sort of a stressful environment, if you will. So number one, I'd say it's the pace of change. Secondly, I would call it maybe communication. And when I say communication, I mean, what are the messages that the senior leader needs to signal to the organization to set that positive intention, that positive vision, and forward motion? And a lot of leaders really don't know how to give that message effectively. And also communication, because many times the structure of the organization is in silos. And these silos really need to be able to talk across lines together and to work together. However, there's so many barriers, and they don't always get to have the proper communication, which slows down their success, which is certainly a challenge in a fast-paced work environment. So I'd say fast-paced communication. And then thirdly, I would say it's finding, selecting, and developing the right people to be in the right jobs in the organization. And that's really hard. Sometimes you're interviewing a lot of people. You think someone looks good, and you bring them in, and they're not the right fit. And it's so costly to have to start over or to replace that person. Or you bring in the right people, and you don't know how to do the proper development so that they're retained. So those are the three huge things that I think are plaguing pretty much every industry.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you brought up a couple points that I would love to expand on. First of all, when you are in an organization and you are helping them with that communication problem that you mentioned earlier, the one where there are silos and barriers, how do you help that leader deal with that? I mean, that is the existing environment. So how do you help them circumvent that situation?
Yes. And, you know, a lot of times, Deborah, I think that what I see is the leader may not assess, if you will, the right problem to begin with in the organization. So let me give you an example. I have a client who has these sorts of issues. However, when I first spoke with him, what he thought he had was a disengaged workforce that didn't really want to do the work. And that was not the problem. This particular leader has a very engaged workforce. They are people who are very passionate about doing the work. However, the messages that he often delivers at that corporate level to the organization is more about, oh, this is wrong, that's wrong, and, you know, we need to fix this, we need to fix that. And he says all of this before celebrating their significant successes and acknowledging their significant strengths. So I think first, one of the jobs I really do is assess what's the real problem. And then secondly, what can you, meaning senior leader from your chair, specifically do that would help the workforce to have the kind of culture, the kind of environment that helps them to deliver on those dynamic organizational results? And a lot of times it's the messaging from the top, or it may be the structure of the organization. How things are structured, there may be unnecessary barriers to communication that they don't realize are there because they live in it every day. And I come in, I can see those barriers and help them to begin to remove them.
You know, you bring up such a good point around engagement. I think that engagement gets a lot of blame, misplaced blame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You brought up a perfect example, but I've seen that myself. So, yes. As far as the saying, the fish stinks from the head, right? Have you ever been in an environment where you were brought in to do a particular job, however, you didn't get to have the access to the leadership that you wanted in terms of the top person, but maybe lower levels you did. Have you ever encountered a situation like that where you didn't have full access to all the people, all the pieces of the puzzle to really make the change that you saw was possible?
You know, often, Deborah, what I experience is that I will have access to the people, however, not enough to really do the work on the senior leader. And what I mean by that is the senior leader may call me and may say, you know what, we're having an issue here with upper middle management, or maybe it's C-suite executives, but they're the direct reports of that executive. And what they may want me to do is to come in and structure an intervention for that level of the organization, absent the CEO or absent the president actually participating. So I have access to him, but he's not involved. And it's usually a male in most cases of the organizations I work with. So he'll come in and say, yes, this sounds great. Go ahead, proceed, do this with my people. So I come in, we start, the people are enthused, they're excited, they want to do the work, they want to participate. And let's say we're planning innovation and coming up with new ideas for innovation. And so we've got these teams and they've come up with their ideas. Now they're ready to present to the CEO what they've been working on. And then the CEO comes in, and because that person has not been exposed to the same, I'll say, education that the rest of the people have gone through, or even the same experiences, they hear the ideas with a different ear. And the kind of messaging they give back to the organization says to them, oh, we did all of this work and you really don't get it. And that's really quite unfortunate, because you could have a workforce that's more demoralized after that than if the senior leader had rolled up his or her sleeves, jumped in, and did the work with them.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. I really was curious about that situation, because that, as the saying goes, the fist stings from the head. So if that leader, that senior leader, is not on board, you can't have the level of effectiveness that you envision the organization having with all hands in, you know? So you wrote the book, Lead Yourself First. How long did it take you to write that book? Was it something years in the making, or you just got up and said, I'm writing?
You know, I often say a lifetime, because really it's sort of a collection of experiences from my life, the lessons that I have learned from those experiences, and how I leverage them to help my clients with the experiences that they're going through. Like, your show is all about taking a leap. My clients often have to take a leap that's difficult for them to take. And as someone who's charged pills in the military, as well as in other places metaphorically in my life, I know what that's like. And I can help walk with them through that. So I say it's taken a lifetime in reality of writing, a number of months. It took a number of months for me to actually put it down in paper, what I really wanted to say.
Mm-hmm. And what do you see as the primary task of leaders, especially the senior leader?
Yes, and really, the reason I wrote this book is because of all the things you and I have been talking about so far, which is the fact that oftentimes the senior leader doesn't see what their role is and what they need to do. And so my whole message is, lead yourself first. Because in order to engage the rest of the workforce, you have to do your own work in developing you. So if I think about what leadership tasks are important for that senior leader to engage, one, you know, they have to create a culture that actually enables those dynamic organizational results. So they have to be looking from the 50,000-foot level and assessing, what are the resources that my people need? Do they need personnel in certain areas? Do they need training in certain areas? What is it that may be a barrier that's standing in the way that they need to remove? So first of all, it's the eye towards the culture and creating that, and thinking about how can they launch what I'll call a variety of high-performance teams throughout the organization that actually are providing feedback to one another on a regular basis, so that they are using all the talents and all the gifts of each person on that team to get the results. And before they get to the teams, they've got to figure out how do they develop the individual people. So the senior leaders got to think about that, developing individual people, launching high performance teams, and then creating that culture that enables the dynamic organizational results. So when I say lead yourself first, I'm saying to that senior leader, if you're going to build an organization of significant impact and it's growing and it's getting bigger physically, or it's getting bigger because you're taking on a different level or kind of work for your clients, you're going to have to build a bigger bag to hold all that. And that includes you.
You've mentioned the development of the team a couple of times.
Yes.
What recommendation do you have for the development of employees, whether it's new employees or employees who have been there for in the organization for a while?
You know, a lot of times people have to think about the job that they're in right now and also where are they going next and where are they going in the distant future. And as you think about that, as the individual thinks about it, as the organization thinks about it, how they want to deploy personnel, you know, down the path a little bit, you have to ask this question: what does that job in the future require? What are some of the skills, the experiences, the abilities that are going to be necessary? And then you assess that individual leader. Where are they now? What are their strengths? What are their development needs? What do they need to work on? And then you say, okay, what do we need to add to this person's experience so that they receive that? So it could be that the person may need to be placed in a certain kind of job that teaches those skills. They may need to participate in some training and development. They may need to have a coach or mentor internally or externally who helps them to navigate some of the current challenges and so that they build capacity, you know, for the future. Mm-hmm. All the while, I think it's a continual experience, but it's related to what you're doing now and what's coming next. It's not just random what you have the people work on.
What is your advice for interpersonal issues, communication issues? The boss not being, you know, whether it's a middle management boss or a more senior level manager or leader. What is your recommendation for how they deal with interpersonal issues with their direct reports?
A lot depends on what the issue is. So, you know, it depends on what the conflict is about and where it started. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I'll put it this way. There's not the same pill. Let's say someone comes in with a headache. Depending on the cause of the headache, you're going to have a different treatment. So conflict has multiple causes as well. And depending on what caused the conflict will determine the direction we go in fixing it. So I'll give you an example. I have a client now who's got some conflict in the organization because there are people who are remaining, let's say, from a prior administration where the cultural norms were very different, the expectations were very different. And so how this employee operates and what they think it's appropriate to do is exactly the opposite of what my client is building. And so part of dealing with that conflict that this person tends to stir up in the organization is us crafting very clear plans where we give the employee feedback about the actions they're taking and what's the impact of those actions in the workplace, and setting the bar so that this person knows what are the current expectations. How does this line up? Where are you now? And beginning to brainstorm with them, if you want to have a different impact than what you're having now, what else could you do besides what you chose to do in this situation? So that they're already thinking about scenario planning and they're thinking about those next steps. And they know they're not going to be able to continue doing what they did in the past because they will be called on the carpet for that. I don't mean in a nasty, ugly way, but it will be noted and they will have a conversation with their leader.
Got it. So regarding the book, not even to get to the book yet. In general, do you hold leadership events, or do you have like actual leadership events that people can executives or senior leaders can go to? Or do you pretty much go to the organizations?
Yes, I have a customized approach to leadership development, which means that, let's say, an executive may contact me and say, here's what we're experiencing in our organization. These are the kind of challenges that we're running into. And as I talk to them and find out what's going on, and also find out what outcomes they're really looking to achieve, I then actually will develop an approach or process for them to experience that will deliver the outcome that they're looking for. And so that's quite customized. I know that many of the leaders that I work with, they prefer to remain private or anonymous and not necessarily be in groups with other people. So we'll work internally in their organization with their people in sort of a customized and private way about their concerns. Often that's at their location, but frequently it's really at a third location, because we don't want them, as we often would say in the military, to be too close to the flagpole and to be, you know, interrupted and called back in to do something in the day-to-day work operations. So we frequently will go to a place that's more like a retreat-like setting where they can really think and plan and experience something new and different, and then after that come back and implement in the workplace.
Oh, that sounds great. And that's done individually. Is there any kind of event?
Frequently that's in a, it depends on what the outcomes are and what they're trying to work on. It may be in a group setting, and maybe the whole senior leadership team may come together for that. Or perhaps if we're working, let's say it's upper middle managers, senior vice presidents or something like that, we may bring different groups together. Frequently, for example, let's say you've got two groups that have been in silos for a long time. We might work individually with each silo to bring them up to a certain level of experience. Then we bring the two silos together and begin the cross-communication process. So it can happen like that, or it could be that we could go in and work with an individual executive. So it just depends on what the challenge is that we're addressing.
I see. Perfect. And as far as the book is concerned, when was the book released?
It was released in March, the 4th of March. So it's brand new. And it's up on Amazon.
Nice. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And so you are in pretty much book signing mode at this point, I'm assuming. Are you going to like different cities and doing your book signing?
Well, we're doing a little bit of that, and we're also getting the word out through even programs like yours, because we know that there are listeners out there who are interested in hearing about it, and I may not get to their city for a book signing. However, we do have a major book signing coming up, and this one is in New York City. It's going to take place on Saturday, the 16th of June, which is the day before Father's Day. And we're going to be in Midtown Manhattan at St. John Boutique, which is a women's clothing store. It's on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan. Also supporting the Just Like My Child Foundation. And native New Yorker Vivian Glick, who now lives in California, is the founder of that organization. And they provide leadership empowerment for girls and teenagers in Uganda. And it's a wonderful effort. And so we're also donating to their cause as well.
Fabulous, fabulous. So how can people reach you, Dr. Karen?
Yes, they can reach me in several ways. First, at my website, www.transleadership.com. If they would like to RSVP for the New York event, if they're in New York area or plan to visit the day before Father's Day, they can send a message to my assistant, and that'll be at Deanna, D-E-A-N-N-A, at transleadership.com. Or they can also write to me, Dr. Karen, K-A-R-E-N, at transleadership.com.
Fabulous. All right. Thank you so much for being here, Dr. Karen. sharing all your
expertise. Thank you so much, Deborah, for having me.
You are welcome. Thank you, everyone, for listening. My guest today was Dr. Karen Wilson-Starks. This is your life coach, Deborah Brown, thanking you for tuning in to Taking a Leap. I can be reached directly if you have any questions or comments at 954-6361-3617, or you can go to takingaleap.com for other information. See you on the other side of success.